And let me start that over. I meant to say indie developer first, and what an idiot. I tripped over my own words. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pursuing Pixels. My name is Kevin Portelli, and I'm here tonight joined again with our pal and indie designer and indie developer, Matt Glanville. How you doing tonight, Matt?
Hello. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good deal. Thanks for joining us again. 2 weeks in a row. We don't have to let anybody know that we recorded these back to back. But we're super glad to have you. Like, we obviously, you know, we've gushed about your games, like I mentioned last week, numerous times on the podcast. And we're always like, you're always even popping into our Discord and like even like DMing me sometimes, like, check this game out. This one looks up your alley. So like, you're always kind of in tune with the type of games we like to play and check out, or at least speaking for myself, for sure. Like, we're on the same wavelength. So I've been really looking forward to chatting and like picking your brain about your actual process, about like the games that you work on, and especially being as like your first three games, which again, we've talked about on the podcast a few times, or at least mentioned, Switch and Shoot, Ghost Grab 3000, and Singled Out, are all like, they have a very arcadey, like, pick up and play, really short burst sessions. Like, you know, it's like, here's the gameplay concept and here's what it is. Love it or hate it, like, this is what it is. Play the game, and that is what it is. Where your game that you're working on currently, Dungeon Death Ball, which is I think I mentioned last week too that you've done kind of an early access thing, and it still has like a lot of that arcadey DNA in my opinion, but it definitely is got way more depth than your other games, and that's not a slight on the other games, but it's just, this is clearly, you know, a replayable thing. Like I mentioned last week, DJ's already been playing it like again and again and again, even though he's beaten it. He's like the type of person that a lot of times will beat a game, and like, that, as long as he saw credits or technically beat the game, like, that's good enough for him, and he's on to the next game. So it's something to be said if he's like, I want to max out, I want to like keep perfecting my runs. Like, it's not every game that makes you want to keep doing that. You know, it's not just because you can that you want to, you know. So yeah. I'm just very curious, like, how has that process gone for you in switching gears a little bit, at least in my mind, or has it not felt so much like a gear switch for you, moving into working on Dungeon Death Ball?
Yeah, not really, because I mean, when I started it, so I actually made, I kind of worked on these games in a weird order. So I made Switch and Shoot, and then when I went full-time indie, Dungeon Death Ball was the first project that I started almost immediately.
Really?
Yeah. And that was like 3.5 years ago now.
Wow. And
in that time, I kind of took a bit of a break from it and made Ghost Grab 3000. And then actually during Ghost Grab 3000, I took a break as well and made Singled Out. So I kind of went down like an Inception style, like, into multiple projects, and now I'm like working my way back out. And I suppose at some point,
it's almost like,
nesting
dolls or something.
Yeah, yeah. I'll find out if like actually I am in a game as well. That's like the next logical step. But so like at the time, it didn't really feel like kind of switching gears from a pattern I'd established. It was more just like, okay, what's the next project? And also, Dungeon Death Ball started out as something much, much smaller, as is like the case with so
every
many
game.
Which has been like a real pain to kind of resolve, actually. But it started out as a prototype, which you were mentioning just now, like the Patreon prototypes I got on my itch page. One of those, called Confused Rogue, was actually like the seed for Dungeon Death Ball. So it was like a 1D roguelike where you're just moving left to right, and you get a random selection of actions that you can perform. And it's kind of like a slot machine. So like, when you use what you have, like three, basically like a deck builder sort of thing, but you have like three actions at the bottom. When you use one of them, it'll be randomly replaced with another one. And you just have to like pick from those three of how to progress. And it's just like pushing left to right through like oncoming waves of enemies. And I started to build up into a bigger game, and like as I did that, it kind of evolved into this like 2D rather than 3D. 1D. 2D like actual like tactics game basically, and then also like with this whole sports element. So like all of that grew out of it. Originally, it was going to be like quite a tiny game. It just got way out of hand.
in a good way though, because like you can tell that you've been honing these ideas for a while. And again, I the only reason I hadn't played it up until pretty recently, till you reached out and were like, hey, you guys want to check it out? I want to make this like final layer of polish. And like, because I always just kind of, I have this like mental barrier with early access games where I'm just like, I want to play it when the developer feels like it's ready, you know. But at the same time, yeah, I do understand, like, hey, you want some feedback, especially for a game like this, where it is like, it isn't just like an arcadey thing that is based on kind of control and gameplay feel. It really is like, how do these mechanics marry together with one another? And how do, you know, does this make things too easy? Does this make things too hard? Is this well balanced? Like, it, you get into a lot more when you're getting into the tactics aspect of things, I would feel, you know, everything you add is going to change maybe five other things in the game and the way they work.
Yeah. It's a real balancing.
So I got to imagine it. Yeah. Like I got to imagine every update you make, you're like, or you think of something like, oh, I want to put this in the game. And then it's like, oh, but if I do that, then I got to worry about how this enemy works, because that might be too easy for them to exploit that mechanic or something, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like switch and shoot, it's just like, you can probably just say, again, not to say that this is easy, but you can just say like, okay, how does the difficulty curve feel? And that's kind of what you're balancing mostly, you know, and style and all the other stuff. But you're not having to think about like, is this weapon too powerful? Is it, you know, you're not having to juggle all that extra stuff, which is, I don't know. I wonder what do you prefer as far as like game designing, or do you kind of like to have these multiple projects going on at once and like be like, oh, okay, I'm kind of burned out on Dungeon Death Ball. So let me work on Singled Out, or let me join a game jam for, I know Singled Out started as a game jam project in the Game Maker's Toolkit game jam, which we've talked about a few times on the podcast. And I know you've participated in a couple times as well.
Yeah, I do love doing that, but I think it's like, I need to, one thing I've learned over the last few years of doing this like indie full-time work is that like I need to really kind of rein myself in sometimes, because I do just, it's so easy just to get completely sidetracked and like go, okay, I'm just going to build up this like prototype idea over the weekend, and then like the next thing I know, I've spent a week building that up and I've not touched my main project, you know. And I'm sure lots of other people have the same issue, and like this is why projects just kind of get, you know, left abandoned, is because like by the time you think you should come back to the one you started ages ago, it's like you've lost interest, or you're like, you don't understand your code base anymore, or you've improved so much you don't want to work on that anymore. And this has really been like an experience for me to learn how to discipline myself and just like absolutely like stay focused on this one thing. You must finish it, like don't get sidetracked anymore. Like I did it twice, that's enough, right? Like stop it now.
But at least with some of those sidetracks, you were able to turn those into released games, you know, with Ghost Grab 3000 and turning Singled Out from a game jam entry to, and I don't think you even changed that much with Singled Out, right? I know you added some like more randomization and like leaderboards and, you know, some more cool features, but it's virtually the same game, right?
Yes.
Between the game jam version and the version that's on Switch and Steam.
Yeah. I kind of amazed myself in doing that. And I think like, this is the beauty of game jams, is that you can amaze yourself with like how much you can get done in a short time when you really have to focus it and like control the scope. Whereas with, like Ghost Grab 3000 and Dungeon Death Ball, they both really like grew and evolved so much throughout development, that they're almost, I mean, not unrecognizable, but they are drastically different games from how they started out. Whereas, Singled Out was like basically the same game that I'd released as part of the game jam in a 48-hour window.
Crazy.
Bulked up and polished.
Yeah. And it's so good. That's like the perfect type of game. Like I know we were talking about last week, like this is a different type of game, but like, you know, I was talking about how I like to play like puzzly games on like couch co-op style, even if somebody doesn't have the controller. But this is a perfect, like, if you got some buddies over, like having a few beers or whatever, and like passing the Switch around or the controller, and like, it's just kind of, it's such a wacky, goofy game of like, oh, you accidentally shot a pedestrian, or, you know, you shot the super galactic criminal. Like, it's got that frantic pace to it. Like, it's just a really, it's like a fun party game, on top of being like a fun kind of just like chasing the leaderboard. You know, it's just, there's nothing really quite like it. It's definitely like, it's a simple concept, but it's really addictive and fun to play.
Thanks. Yeah. I hope that would be the case. And it seems
well,
to,
that's with all your out. Games as, yeah, with all your games. I mean, they're just unbelievably replayable. And again, so even the first three that are more arcadey are super replayable just in their nature. But again, with Dungeon Death Ball, even I haven't beaten it yet, unlike DJ, but like, I still keep chipping away at, like, I want to keep playing it. And I want, like, it's just a really fun set of mechanics. Like, I really like how I kind of, again, having not really looked into it too much, knowing it was in early access, like, I just knew, like, oh, this looks cool. It's a new game from Matt. I'll check it out when it's out. I was kind of just under the assumption, oh, it's a tactical dodgeball game. And like, that's kind of all I thought it was. And it's like, no, this is like combining elements of like football. And there's so much more to it. You're not actually, like, in a lot of cases, you're not trying to even hit the enemies with the ball. You're trying to actually just carry the ball to the end zone. And it's not like the field isn't divided in half like I was expecting, like my team on one side, the other team on the other side. It's like, no, you have obstacles, and you're actually like, the play field will shrink if you take too long. And like, it's so well balanced. I really love it, and it never feels too challenging, but it doesn't feel like it's too easy. But how have you enjoyed or not enjoyed the early access experience, like getting feedback from players? I know you have your own Discord as well, like, where people pop into there, and your Patreon. Like, have you found that to be a rewarding or useful process, or frustrating at times, or mixed bag?
It can be a bit of both. Like, for the most part, I love it. Like, when I get feedback, and I find it so useful, and I'm always grateful. And it continues to, I guess, like, just amaze me that, you know, people sink so much time into something that I've made and get so much enjoyment out of it. And it's like, usually you don't get that until the game's released. But to be able to have that kind of drip fed through the development process as well has been really, really cool. And to be able to use that to guide my decision making has been really cool as well, especially as this is a genre which I've never worked in before, like the turn-based tactics. So yeah, it was absolutely invaluable. Like the side of it that I find frustrating is, it's mainly that I can't do everything, you know, like I get great feedback all the time. And it's almost always valid to some extent.
Yeah.
But it often, there's like, in the back of my mind, it's like, okay, that's a really good idea, and the game would definitely benefit from that, but like, I just don't have time, like, or it's like, there's such a huge cost involved in implementing that, like, whether it's kind of, you know, all the rebalancing that comes as a fallout of that, or like, you know, all the other systems that it would interfere with in some way that would just be a big kind of unknowable mess of issues to resolve afterwards. I just find like, how do I deal with that? Like, how do I kind of let people down gently and tell them like, I love your idea, but I just can't do it. And
right
yeah, that's been like one of the hardest parts, actually. Well, I say one of the hardest parts, but maybe not one of the hardest parts, but a hard part.
Yeah, no, but I know what you mean. I can only imagine. But at the same time, maybe some of those ideas, even if they don't and end up making their way into Dungeon Death Ball, it might be something that you're like, oh, that you tuck away for later. Like, hey, that's a cool idea that, like, I wish I would have thought of that earlier. And if I, now that I have it in my bag of tricks, like, I can maybe implement a similar concept into another project and implemented it, you know, in an interesting way, where it's in this way, you'd be kind of wedging it into something that's already working. You know, it's not broken by any means, you know, so
Yeah, you definitely get like these, you start to notice patterns of like things people ask for or want, or, you know, like what would like to change. And that's been really helpful. And like this is applying to, you know, reviews of finished games as much as early access as well. You start to notice people kind of ask for similar kinds of things. And like with my games, I found really in a big way with my first three arcade games is like people wanted more, you know, like they're small games.
Yeah.
They're quite constrained in their scope. And people have always just asked for like, even if it's not like a bigger game as such or like a longer experience, but, you know, more modes or like unlockable stuff or, you know, some ways to kind of vary it and mix it up. So
yeah,
that's something that I've really tried to address. I got a bit of that into singled out, like I put in the memory mode where you can't see the hints after a few seconds. And then in Dungeon Deathball, I tried to put a little bit more of that, well, a lot more of that kind of stuff in as well, because it's like, yeah, you're totally right. You know, like why not kind of, once you've made like a full game, it's usually not too much of an ask to kind of add some like variation on that.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like putting in 20 new levels for like, you know, a first person shooter or something. That's like a huge ask. But like, you know, a mode that just like changes the rules a little bit is much more feasible.
Yeah.
So like if I can kind of bear that stuff in mind going into it, then that's really, really beneficial.
Yeah. Now, do you have any, like, when it comes to influences, in particular for, like, Dungeon Deathball, do you have any, like, influences, like, tactics-wise that you're kind of looking at? Like, I know in the Discord, like, it seems like Into the Breach comes up pretty often.
Yeah.
As far as, like, I think to me it seems like it comes up in the sense that it's just, like, it's a very readable game. Like, it's, like, you kind of know what the enemies are going to do, and then you can plan out your moves, and it's very, it's chess-like in that way. Like, you have more, like more knowledge than you would have in chess. Like you actually know what the team is going to do next. So like you can kind of, it's just really well thought out in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. The Into the Breach was I'd say like the one biggest influence on Dungeon Deathball for sure. That game really kind of like, I guess like opened my eyes to a totally different way of designing tactics games. Really not that
it's a good game. It's a really good game.
It's really good. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, that the kind of perfect information aspect of it was something that was really, really helpful to look at as a point of reference throughout all of development, start to finish. Because like they really nailed it in many, many ways. And as I understand, the developers of Into the Breach, you know, went through many, many iterations and had to figure this stuff out and to be able to look to that for a point of reference to learn from has been invaluable and really awesome. So yeah, thanks to those guys for doing all the work for me,
doing the research. Yeah.
But the other aspect of it, which I really was inspired by, was like just how kind of short and compact the battles were in that game. Whereas something like, you know, well, almost every other tactics game really is like long drawn out battles that can take.
Yeah. You hear tactics and you think like XCOM and like, we're sitting down and playing this all day on permadeath mode. And, you know, it's like, it's an extreme form of gaming a lot of times.
Yeah. And like a big commitment. Right. And Into the Breach, you can just dip in. Like sometimes they can take a long time, but like usually that's just because you're agonizing over one decision. You wanted to be quicker, you could. But like, what is it like four turns is generally the turn limit in Into the Breach.
I think so. Yeah.
And I just thought that was great. Like everything's just so condensed and like the maps are really small. Like they all fit on one screen. You have just three units to take care of. I really liked that aspect, and that was something I wanted to put in Dungeon Deathball as well. So that's like, that's why that has that same kind of format. Yeah. Really like short, small, constrained battles with not many units to keep track of.
Yeah, and I would say you've potentially even condensed that format like down even tighter, like in the, like it just feels like it still has the arcadey feel that your other games have, like this, especially, you know, it might be, you know, the chunky pixels and the awesome chiptunes are definitely helping the cause, but like, it just has that like immediacy of like, I still feel like I'm playing a Matt Glanville game. I don't, it's not like I'm just totally switching gears and playing a tactics game. So like, do you have on the arcadey end of things, like are there strong influences or even inspirations from like growing up and like, oh, these are the things that like really got me. Like these are the things I look to recreate in my games or the, like the feeling I look to recreate.
One of the big ones for Dungeon Death Ball was like my biggest touchstone for tactics games, which was Vandal Hearts. Do you know Vandal Hearts?
Okay. I'm familiar with the name. Is it a PlayStation game, I want to say?
Yeah, PS1. The first two games PS1. The first one in particular had just like such a cool style. Like it was really, really pixely, low poly, crunchy, colorful, like chunky little dioramas, you know.
Yeah,
very much in like the Final Fantasy Tactics ballpark, but
okay,
like but more pixely, like it wasn't trying to kind of smooth over it too much.
Yeah, like Final Fantasy tries to go for like that painterly look sometimes, where like I know what you mean, where it's like this is more chunky and pixely.
Yeah, and Vandal Hearts 2 kind of steered more in that direction, but the first one was like just really nice and crunchy, and it had these amazing, like it's really gory, but like these amazing blood geysers or geysers that like when you kill an enemy, it just erupts into the air. Like, you know, the kind of like Shogun assassin, like just way over the top, like fountains of blood spurt out. And it was so satisfying to do, like to kill any enemy in that game. Well, like if they were like made of rock, it would just be like boulders just pouring out of them everywhere. So that kind of
stuff goes a long way in a tactics game, like where you don't get to actually like input your attacks per se or like execute them in a dynamic way. Like it goes a long way to have a cool animation that goes along with it and just like makes you feel awesome when you're doing it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was one big one. And then throughout the rest of my games, like it's not something that I'm even particularly conscious of anymore, but the Vlambeer games, I think, had a big impact. And like, I'm sure lots of other people would say the same, but
like
just looking at how much kind of polish and juice goes into those games, like it just kind of changed my way of like thinking about like how to add like visual feedback and audio feedback to my games. Up until I really looked at their games in depth, it was, I think, like if you went back and looked at any of the stuff I made before then, it's just kind of like piddly and like not very impactful, and like stuff is generally just very
substantial, maybe.
Yeah. And it's like, really, you want to make that stuff noticeable, you want to make it really pop.
Because again, with something like Switch and Shoot, where it's literally a one button shooter, like you're not even controlling the steering of your ship, like you just switch directions every time you shoot, hence the name. But like that's got to feel good, you know. Gotta, every time you push that button, it's got to feel satisfying. Or when you go into the like when you're fully charged up, I forget what you go through, like the hyper zones
hyperdrive.
Or whatever, and like
hyperdrive,
and it's like you know you get that heavy laser beam and you feel kind of out of control, and it's just like the way the screen starts rumbling, like you know, you almost feel, you're not, you know, it's, I'm being extreme, but like you almost feel like you're in the cockpit, you know, like of the ship, and it's rumbling, and like you need that stuff, because otherwise if it was just like that, easily could have also in prototype form just been like a little basic looking triangle ship with, you know, it could just be really boring at a glance. But like all that extra juice, even all the character names, like every time your character spawns, and I'm sure you just, I don't know if those are randomly generated or if you just plugged in a million names and had them pop up, but I think they're all hilarious. Like I love, or even like just the little expressions when you die and like your commander has like the, the humor in your games is so great. Like, I'm such a sucker.
Yeah, those names are randomly generated. Well, it's actually a combination. Like there's like a few hundred parts of names, and then I stitch them together. So there's like a bunch of beginnings, there's a bunch of middles, and there's a bunch of ends, and then I like grab one of each and put them in a row.
Okay.
And that makes a name. And then also have to like run them through a filter just to make sure it didn't accidentally spell out something obscene. Which happened loads.
That's awesome. That's hilarious. That's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, I know, like, you mentioned that you're now kind of doing the solo indie dev thing, and you've been doing that for a while, but you were previously working in the game industry itself, right?
Yep. Yep.
How do you feel? How do you like between, I'm sure there's pros and cons to each, but like being full-time solo indie dev, like, do you feel like that was the right move to make? Do you feel like I'm really happy in this setting to kind of do my own thing and not have, you know, in any job, like, that's the hardest part, at least for me, is like, you know, there's sometimes you're just like, but it doesn't make sense to do it that way, but you have to do it that way because that's just the way that you do it at your job, you know. Yeah. But when you're your own boss, it's like, hey, I want to make the game this way. I don't care what anybody else thinks. Like, I'm doing it. You know, do you feel like that's the case, or do you miss being part of a bigger team sometimes? Or
yeah, it's a bit of both. Again, like, it's like, some, for the most part, I'm happy that I took the plunge, and I definitely think, like, at the time it was the right decision to make, and
yeah,
it was what I needed at the time, and yeah, for sure, and I'm really happy with, like, everything that I've managed to do in that time as well. Yeah. There's definitely times when I do miss the, like, the collaborative aspect of it. But then, you know, there's times where I don't even think about that because I'm just so happy just kind of, you know, getting on with my own thing.
Yeah.
I love to just kind of, like, get lost in the zone and just make stuff, like, make whatever I want to make. But yeah, for sure, like, the biggest thing, I think, is, well, I guess the two biggest things. One of them is obviously, like, the kind of financial stability you get from having a job. Like, that is just kind of,
right,
just so, so kind of tough to deal with on an ongoing basis, like, to not have that, you know?
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say, you know, I've really struggled financially, which I'm thankful for, but just knowing all the time in the back of your mind that you don't know if, like, the next thing you make is gonna sell or not, and you don't know what that's gonna mean for you in a few months' time or whatever.
Right. Right. And especially when you're in a situation, like, it's not just you living in an apartment by yourself. It's like, I've got a wife and I've got a 2.5-year-old kid. Like,
exactly.
It's, you know, I've got people that are depending on me. You know, I know my dad always says, like, when you were born, I'm the oldest in my family. He's like, when you were born, like, that's when I realized, like, hey, I can't mess around anymore. Like,
yeah.
I got to, like, get my shit together and make sure that I'm, you know, making a living and whatever, you know.
Exactly. So
it's like,
yeah,
you can't, like, just be winging it and, like, oh, if this doesn't work out, I'll figure something else out, you know?
Yeah. 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 So there's that. It's just kind of, like, constantly gnawing away at the back of your mind. And then the other thing is just, yeah, like, the collaborative side of it, you know, having, just being able to, like, throw an idea at someone and be like, what do you think of this? Like, what should we, or, like, yeah, or like, you know, just kind of offloading something, like, what should we do? Like, I don't know what to do with this. What should I do?
Yeah. You know? Or, yeah, even maybe taking someone else's idea and running with it. And, like, yeah, you know, so sometimes you can be inspired, like, it just takes a little spark from somebody else. And then, like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, what if we did it like this, you know? And then all of a sudden you got a whole new concept or something, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I would imagine the scope as well, like, you know, cause I know you had worked on some of, like, the Oddworld games in the past, yeah, and, like, you know, those are much larger games that on a scale than what you're working on. Like, do you miss that kind of aspect of, like, level design and stuff like that? Cause you're doing more stuff that's on, like, the procedural generation or random generation sort of thing. Like, you're balancing difficulty more than designing levels, if that makes sense. I hope, yeah, I'm not speaking out of turn there, but
no, that's absolutely it.
Like, do you miss that aspect of things, like designing levels, or did you do stuff like that before?
Sometimes, yeah, I was doing a lot of that stuff. I did that on Oddworld New and Tasty. Nice. that was a remake, so it was kind of constrained in how much I could you know, create new levels,
change things. yeah.
But I was doing level design on Oddworld Soulstorm as well, during the early stages of that project. And that was really, like, yeah, kind of, you know, we can kind of really run with that and come up with completely new, like, wild ideas and that kind of stuff. And yeah, that is always fun for sure. Like, I kind of got my start in doing stuff like that, like doing level design with, like, Half-Life mods and StarCraft level editor and that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And I'm a huge fan of kind of imagining up, like, imagining environments and worlds to explore, and kind of, like lots of set pieces, and like atmospheres and moods and all that sort of stuff. Like, I really love working on that kind of thing too. So, sometimes I miss it, but like, it's a totally different skill set. And I think sometimes that it's not really one that's compatible with the work I'm doing now, because it just takes so long to make anything, unless you really kind of like constrain the fidelity of it, and go for something very, very simple. You just can't really, like, as a solo developer, you can't really make the kind of stuff that I would want to make anyway. Like the levels for that, as well as the game itself, you know, like that's just just so much work. But like, you know, if I was in a team, or if I was working on a bigger project, like that kind of stuff is really, really fun to do.
Yeah. Now, what about like future wise, as far as like what you plan on doing next? Like, I know you're still kind of working on Dungeon Deathball and honing in, but do you have other things like down the pipeline that you're planning on, or are you just kind of like, hey, I'm just focused on Dungeon Deathball right now? Or if you can talk about any of that, I don't know if you got things up your sleeve as well.
Yeah, to be honest, it's really just like really focused on Dungeon Deathball right now.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of just go all out, get it done, figure out what's next. I really don't know at this point. I always have tons of ideas and tons of prototypes, or like, you know, just little mock-ups of stuff that I just, like I was saying earlier, just like make in a day or whatever, and that kind of stuff tends to, I mean, lately, like that kind of stuff I was really just had to shelve, but there is a lot of things that I could draw on if I was gonna, but
right, it's always like cooking and simmering in the back of your brain somewhere.
No idea right now. That's not even just trying to dodge the question.
But that's awesome. That's like has me excited in a different way. Like, I'd obviously be excited if you knew what you were working on, but I'm also excited to just, again, like, you've got such a great track record of making cool stuff that's up my alley, that it's just like, I see your little egg logo that I used to think was a potato, and I'm just like, you know, I'm like, that, all I need to see is that, and I'm good to go. I did want to ask a little bit too. I know that like a lot of people, indie developers will mention like how tough it is to like get their games on different platforms or even get a publisher and whatnot. And I know that you self-publish all your games, or for the most part. I know you have had some help publishing on like PlayStation and whatnot, but I think you've self-published on Switch. And I think you're on Steam as well, right? Self-published.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I worked with Huey Games, who did the publishing for Switch and Shoot on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Okay.
And then everything else has been self-published. Yeah.
Nice. And how have you enjoyed that experience? Like, has that been, have you ever worked with a publisher before other than Huey Games? Like, it, even when you were at like your previous jobs, like, you know, do you feel like it's just, is that just another element of like, I'm just flying solo and this is awesome? Or is it another layer of stress of like, man, I got to figure out the business end of this and so on and so forth?
It's mostly stress, if I'm honest. Like, like, I love making games, and I don't necessarily, like a lot of people probably say the same, but I don't necessarily love selling games or marketing games or going through like the digital storefront paperwork or all that kind of stuff. It's
that seems to be the general conundrum, is like, I you know, the people that making the games, like, they spend so much time, it's like then you got to put just as much effort and energy into like engaging on social media or doing whatever if you really want to try to get the word out there. And it's like, you feel like you've earned this break, like, I just finished a game, I just made a game, like, or I just finished the demo, or I, you know, whatever you, whatever aspect of it you just finished, you're like, I don't want to now record 25 GIFs and have tweets scheduled all week. Like, it's a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So I definitely can see, like, you're like, but at the same time, you're like, if nobody buys my game, especially in your case where you're like, I'm a solo dev self-publishing games, like, I'm making a living on people buying this game or not, you know? So it's like that double-edged sword of like, you kind of got to do it, but you don't necessarily want to or enjoy it or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So like, in that respect, like working with a publisher can really help. Or having, you know, someone that can do that for you, on the like PR marketing side of things. So, you know, maybe you can post to your social media accounts and all that kind of stuff. But I do like to do things on my own. So I really kind of limit what I can do in that way. But I think I'm kind of overall happier doing it that way.
Yeah, you always know what's going on. I'm very similar in that regard too. It's like, I want to know what's going to happen from start to finish. And the only way that I can do that is by being there for all of it. You know, I can't like just pay half attention, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like any other, like just before we wrap things up, like any huge influences or just things you want to mention that maybe just wouldn't come up within the realm of conversation, like any just games you grew up, like this is the game that kind of got me started on games in general, like really what, you know, that made you want to become a game designer or, you know, just, you know, inspired you to be like, this is what I want to do, you know, because it's not, I, like you said, it's not easy to do. And it definitely is one of those things that like, you have to be passionate about it to do.
Well,
just period. I mean, unless you get lucky and have a release like Celeste that like, you know, is made by a handful of people that sells millions and millions of copies and you're, you know, get it, just have such success with that. Like, unless it's a story like that or Super Meat Boy, like you're really, you're struggling. It's like the struggling artist kind of situation, you know, it's not easy to be do. So you really have to love it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we were saying earlier, my biggest influence and like my biggest inspiration is always Half-Life 2. And like, yeah, okay, you've done it. You've got me to say it.
I had it written down here, so it's got to come up.
Like anyone who knows me just is sick of hearing about it because I talk about it all the time. But I actually went on like a bit of a binge recently where I kind of revisited a bunch of Half-Life 2 like mods and like videos of like, you know, old levels that I used to play and like pick through some of the level files in the level editor because I just love it so much. I love that world and I love the attention to detail in all the levels. And one of the things that I don't think really occurred to me at the time, but like the more like my kind of development style has evolved, the more I've realized like that game actually, I don't think it gets enough credit for like the kind of breadth of how much kind of emergent gameplay can come out of the encounters in that game, like the combat encounters. And that's something I'm really trying to like, well, I'm looking at now and just like continuously being like finding new sources of inspiration from it. Like back in the day, I used to really love like the environment design and like the kind of the world of it and how like they would lead you down this like very authored path, you know, like they get you to go from A to B and you feel like you went there, like you feel like you chose that path yourself. Actually, you're being led every step of the way, like
right,
exactly
you're
where they
literally
wanted you
walking
to go.
Down a corridor. Yeah.
Yeah. But like the more I've kind of looked at it recently, it's like actually they really let you have actually quite a high amount of agency within that scope. So like, okay, it's like a linear A to B kind of game. But when you compare it to, I know it gets like a lot of stick, but you know, some of the sort of later Call of Duty games where it like they kind of got criticized for being very, very constrained and like you had to basically do exactly the same thing as every other player in exactly the same order. Like I think when you compare something like that to Half-Life 2, Half-Life 2 was just like way ahead of that. And you can like pick up a totally different weapon to someone else and you can approach combat encounters in a completely different way if you, you know, use the environment in a different way or use like the like exploit the enemy's AI in a different way or use like the physics engine in a different way. There's so much that you can do there and there's so many little moments of like kind of putting your own stamp on things and putting your own style on things as a player which I really think it kind of didn't and doesn't get enough credit for.
Yeah, I feel like you hear that like the first time, not the first time I heard it, but like between like System Shock and BioShock, like you always hear about like that kind of emergent gameplay, like, oh, you can, you know, lure them into the water and then zap the electricity. But yeah, you could do that type of stuff, not necessarily in the that exact combination, but like, yeah, you could do stuff with the environment and like it kind of cheesing the systems a little bit. And like, you know, you could do cool stuff. I haven't played a ton of Half-Life and of any variety. I've only played a little bit of Half-Life 2 on, I had the orange box on PS3. Okay. And I played a little bit of it, but just never, I'm not much of an FPS person. So I was just like, I got to check this out. I feel like I need to know what it is, but I haven't, I guess I need to play it basically.
anyone that calls themselves a gamer.
Yeah. Anyone that calls themselves a gamer has to play Half-Life. And now have you played, not to get sidetracked, but have you played Half-Life Alyx at all in the VR one?
Yeah, I had to.
Okay. You've got a VR setup and everything.
Yeah. I got an Oculus Quest purely so that I could play Half-Life Alyx. Cause it was the cheapest option. Not the best option, yeah. But it was the cheapest at the time. I played through all of that. Like, I really enjoyed it, but the actual like experience of doing that was really cumbersome and not one that I want to go back and play again in a hurry. Because I had to.
Right,
like,
right.
I have my currently where I'm recording now. I'm in like my kind of office / spare bedroom, and then my son's bedroom is right next door. And then we're in like quite a tall, thin house, so there's like rooms on each, across like four floors. So I didn't really want to be up here because I'd be making a lot of noise, and I didn't want to wake him up. So I took my entire PC downstairs into the living room and hooked up my Oculus Quest to that. So I had a lot more, lot more space there. But then, you know, like the next day, I had to bring it back upstairs to carry on working again. So,
right, right.
And you know, the game took, I don't know, like a week or something to finish. So, like, yeah, every day for a week, like taking my PC up and down two or three flights of stairs every night, like. It was just a hassle. I didn't really enjoy it.
Yeah, there's still not a great optimal VR setup. Like, I'd love to have one, but at the same time, I'm not rushing out to buy one because I don't have a great place to play it currently, you know?
Yeah.
So
the Quest is good. I will say that. Like, the wireless VR was a huge, huge improvement.
I didn't know it was wireless. That's awesome.
Yeah, you can play it, like, on its own as just a freestanding device, you know? Like, you don't need a PC to run anything.
Oh, cool.
It just all runs on the headset, but you can't play Alyx that way, Half-Life Alyx that way. So, right.
You got a little more juice.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to hook it up to a PC to do that. And then you can do, like, you can wirelessly stream it. So it's actually like just streaming a video to your headset.
Cool.
It's still wireless, but then you're going to run out of battery eventually. So you need to stop playing, or you need to plug in a cable for a while,
be tethered or whatever.
So apart from all those things, it was great.
So can we expect the next Crowbar Sky game to be a VR?
No.
I would, you know, a Dungeon Deathball would be pretty cool in VR, I gotta say. Even when like the door opens up and you get kind of into the arena, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I considered it. I started thinking about, like, could I put all of my games into VR? And I thought, like, Singled Out would be pretty cool because you could just have like all these headsets floating around and you just point and shoot.
Yeah.
And like maybe you've got like a clipboard with your, like, the hints on it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the best match. I thought the switch and shoot could be quite cool if it was like as a virtual arcade cabinet. So you just like stood at an arcade cabinet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those, I've like, when I played the, I've only tried VR one time, but when I tried the Super Hot demo, or not demo, just Super Hot, the first VR version of it or whatever, like, they start you off in kind of like a little office room space or whatever. And I really felt like, I was like, man, I'm here. Like, this feels pretty real. It's not, convincing, it didn't feel like I'm in a virtual thing. I was like, I'm in this space. Like, it feels tangible to me and it's really impressive. That seems like it would be cool.
Yeah, and actually, that was one of the things I really liked about Half-Life Alyx. Was like the world of Half-Life that I've kind of, you know, known for so long, It's like actually kind of stepping into it and seeing it for real. It's like, oh, this is a real place. It's like kind of, you know, watching a movie and then actually going to where it was filmed or something like that. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, seeing like the true scale of things, like, oh, that's how big that enemy is, or that's how, you know, like, it's not just seeing it one step removed. You're like, you're within. It's pretty cool. It's I'm definitely looking forward to like VR being a more affordable, more convenient option somewhere down the line, because I think that could be a really fun experience, you know?
Yeah, I think it's coming. Like, it's just a matter of time, really. It's a shame that it has to be like all kind of driven by Facebook, that they've got their kind of hooks in so much of the most affordable hardware right now.
Yeah,
but hopefully, you know, that just means they're going to drive other companies to
competition, and
so hopefully soon.
Well, cool. So I'll start to get us sidetracked on a VR halfway conversation there at the end, but
fine by me.
But I don't know, is there anything else you want to chat about before we wrap things up, or pretty good to call it there?
Yeah, I'm happy to call it there.
Perfect. But where can people find you on the internet, Matt, as far as your games? And we'll have links in the episode description, of course, too. But where can people find you and chat with you?
Yeah, you can find all of my stuff at mattglanville.com, all one word. And my Twitter and most of my other online social media stuff is at crowbarscar, S-K-A. Like the kind of music like we discussed last week.
Awesome.
But the good classic kind.
The classic kind, yeah. And again, we'll put links to all that stuff. I'll try to remember to put links to like your Patreon and Itch.io page, Steam page, all that stuff, so people can quickly find, you know, all the games and whatnot, because they're all the games except for Dungeon Deathball are out on Switch for $5. Like, cannot recommend them enough, which we've already done multiple times on the podcast. We're not just saying it because Matt's here. but it's, and Dungeon Deathball is right up there with it. I think it will be maybe a little more than $5, as it should be, because it's got it's ton of replayability. Again, it's available early access on Steam right now, so check it out. But if you want to wait, like I usually do, for the 1.0, I think it should be coming relatively soon-ish.
Very soon. Yeah, very soon.
Okay.
It's really close now. I've been saying that for like 2 years, but it genuinely is very, very, very close.
And it's really, like, it feels like a complete game as I'm playing it. I'm definitely not thinking like, oh, there's, you know, there's things missing here. Like, you've been adding things and it's like, oh, nice, that's a cool feature. Oh, this is nice, or that nice touch. But like, it wouldn't feel incomplete without that. Like, it's just like, oh, that's a nice little polish layer, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, this game is definitely one to keep your eye on, whether you've been a fan of Matt's previous work or not. Into the Breach, if you were into something like that and looking for something a little different, definitely check out Dungeon Deathball. But I'm rambling at this point. We can probably wrap things up there, and we will catch you next week. Thanks again for joining us for a couple episodes here, Matt.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for all the tireless work that you do to promote smaller indie games. Like, I really appreciate it, and I'm sure all the developers of all the games that you talk about appreciate it too.
Thanks, man. I was going to say, I hope they do, but either way, I would do it one way or the other, because I just think the games are so fun. I'm like, even if these developers hate me and hate all the tags on Twitter from time to time, it's like, you know, I just love these games and I want more people to play them. And I know that's like, that was one thing I wanted to maybe even dig in with you on. Like, I didn't even bring it up, but like, how hard it is to like get your game seen in the indie world, or even just video game world in general. But there's just so many games, it's hard to make your game stand out and make people pay attention to it again, unless you get that Celeste that just captures everyone's attention at all at once. You know, those are very few and far between. There's only a couple of those that come out a year, if that.
Yeah.
So that's gotta be, that's a whole nother animal. but yeah, I hope Dungeon Deathball cracks through and really makes a little splash, because it should. I think it speaks to a lot of people's gameplay wants and desires, I guess.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. Again, I'm rambling again. But yeah, take care, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye. That looks right now, I think. I don't know. Should we do a clap again? Or?
Yeah, we'll do another clap, and I've got the backup just in case, on the Skype recording. So if something's screwed up, I definitely have audio to work with. So
okay.
All right. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that was spot on that one.
Oh, that was perfect. You're getting it down, man. You're gonna have to be a regular member on the podcast soon. It's funny how my, like, at first it was definitely like a thing where we'd be like, well, let me try that again. Now it's just like, let's go 1, 2, 3, boom.
Nice.
Boom. We're all pretty much on the spot. So, like, John and I can expect it. We play in a band together. So if we can't be in sync, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But